The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Okay, no leather, but yeah, it's a Friday, everybody. And a Friday of a pretty epic week. I don't know how else you describe this. And you know what? It would have been a pretty damn good week, even if Donald Trump wasn't finally being held accountable for the crap he pulled. And here's the thing that really occurred to me at like 4 o'clock in the morning when I was awake. And that is, for the 4 years he was in office, we listened to him lie every time he opened his damn mouth. We watched in horror the things that he did that were embarrassing to us as a nation, to us as a people. We watched in horror as he insulted half of this country, showed his contempt for anybody who didn't vote for him, instead of doing what pretty much every president before him and, well, since has done, and that's saying, I'm the president for this, for everybody. And if you didn't vote for me, that's okay. I'm here for you too. He never had that attitude. He was always of the mind, you didn't vote for me, you're a traitor and you belong in jail. See, that's the mindset of a dictator wannabe. And now, go figure. You know, for months, many of us agonized over whether or not Merrick Garland was doing his job, would go after him, or were they going to let this guy slide because he is the luckiest man alive? Not only was he a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, because you know that he never would have amassed any kind of fortune if it hadn't been handed to him on a silver spoon from daddy, because he's not capable of it. This man has faked his way through everything. But when he sat in the Oval Office, it was apparent he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. He didn't know what he was doing. And most of us, you know, normal people really struggled. You know what? I'll speak for myself. I really struggled with whether or not we were going to make it through those 4 years, or if he was going to do something so stupid because he didn't know any better, or so treacherous because he's a con man at heart, that it would put the not only this country but the entire planet in jeopardy. And I think we came very close a number of times. But then here we are, you know, I listened to my friend Marcy Wheeler, and I believed that Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice and the intelligence community were doing their jobs, that they would, that justice moves very slowly. And look, I firmly believe if I did 1/1000th of the things that Donald Trump has done, I'd already be sitting in a jail somewhere. Again, I'm not Teflon like he is. I am not lucky like he is. So we just regular citizens, you know, we deal with this shit. So I wasn't convinced that Donald Trump would be held accountable, but I had faith that there was an investigation. And especially after seeing the great job that the House Select Committee looking into January 6th has done, that the Justice Department would be totally inept if they just didn't pick up on all the work that the January 6th committee did and then take it from there. But obviously, they were looking at things that you and I were not privy to. And what they were, we now know, were investigating him for was, the Espionage Act. I mean, and more, it's just astounding. So, you know, let's look back on what happened this week, because again, it was a pretty epic week. So on Monday, now we didn't know until much later in the day that at about 10 a.m., the FBI showed up at Mar-a-Lago with a search warrant. And they were there for the better part of the day. Now, we didn't learn about this till many hours later because the FBI wasn't going to say anything about it. The Justice Department wasn't going to say anything about it. They don't comment on ongoing investigations. The person who broke the story was a blogger who has the Florida Politics blog, Peter Shorsha or something like that. And he tweeted out, it looks like that Mar-a-Lago was raided by the FBI today. I don't know enough, and I don't have the resources to get on this. So the rest of you reporters out there, please follow through. And that they did. And what we learn now is that those FBI, plainclothes FBI agents who were unarmed, they weren't looking to make a spectacle or a scene. They wanted to do this quietly, and we've since learned that they tried every conceivable way to get these documents back. They did issue subpoenas. They did negotiate with Trump's people, and Trump, as is his practice, lied. Trump lied and said, you have everything. But they knew they didn't have everything, and in fact, I believe that what the word is that there was... there was an informant, or there is an informant, somewhere in Trump's inner circle who knew that this stuff was still at Mar-a-Lago. So what happened is officials at the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, that's who oversees all of these documents from every administration. They, for months, had been pressing Trump and his people to return these documents. And he and his aides, well, you know, think about it. When they left the White House, they removed boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff they had no right to. You know, when you live in the White House, you're living in the people's house. And all of those things in there do not belong to you. They belong to us, to the country. And furthermore, and this is what galls me, Donald Trump is such a piece of shit. You know, he was so intent on prosecuting Hillary Clinton because she dared to use a private email server and did some official business on that private email server that he signed a stricter law than was already in effect. We already had the Presidential Records Act that prohibited him from taking all these boxes of documents out of the White House. But the bill that he signed, that Trump signed when he was in office, just to be able to go after Hillary Clinton, made it a felony to remove any documents that were secret or top secret. So how does the saying go? Hoisted by his own petard? I'm not even quite sure what a petard is. But I think Trump is finding out, because now he's not only liable under the Presidential Records Act, but under this other bill that he signed into law that makes it a felony. And it wasn't just one box of materials. No, in June, this is what, 3-4 months ago already, FBI agents visited Mar-a-Lago and they even met in person with Trump. And they had already taken out about a dozen boxes from Mar-a-Lago of documents earlier in the year, but they knew there were more. And so in June, they went up to Mar-a-Lago and they're trying to negotiate with him, being very delicate, treating him with kid gloves. And they said, you know what? While you still have stuff here, put another lock on this door, because it was just unlocked where anybody could get at it. And so about 3 weeks later, the FBI, unbeknownst to us at the time, obtained multiple subpoenas for documents and surveillance video. So they knew who was going in and out of that room where all these materials were kept. And then agents removed more boxes of materials. But wait, there were still more. Now, Newsweek is reporting this, and I don't know that anybody else has verified this report, but Newsweek is saying that an informant reportedly told the FBI that Trump was still hiding even more presidential documents, and this informant told them exactly where those documents were located. And so that, combined with concerns they already had over potential nuclear or sensitive intelligence information being among the materials, that prompted Monday's raid. Right? So Monday, Mar-a-Lago is raided, as it should be. On Tuesday, a judge ruled that Donald Trump, for the 20th time, because this he had been appealing it, but on Tuesday, a judge ruled, I think for the last time, that Donald Trump had to turn his tax returns over to the Ways and Means Committee. He's been fighting it since before he took office, because every other presidential candidate since, again, the 70s, releases their tax returns, but not this guy. You know why? Because he has something to hide. On Wednesday, the reason Trump wasn't at Mar-a-Lago because they closed for the summer. Excuse me. Too hot down here in Florida, even though it's cooler than it is in New Jersey where he's been spending time. But I digress. On Wednesday, Donald Trump was in New York to testify under oath in a deposition in the case that's being brought against him by the New York Attorney General. Letitia James. Of course, we learned that he took the fifth 440 times. Actually, more than 440 times. Yeah, the same guy who said, why would anybody take the fifth if they're not guilty? Only guilty people take the fifth, right?
When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the fifth so they're not prosecuted, when you have the man that set up the illegal server taking the fifth, I think it's disgraceful.
Fifth Amendment, Bob. The mob takes the fifth.
Okay, so he's the mob, and guilty people take the fifth. So there you go. Sometimes Donald Trump admits things without trying to admit things. By the way, if you want to weigh in on anything I'm saying, anything that's happened this week, feel free. The phone lines are open. 954-889-6410 is the number. Okay, so that was Wednesday. Donald Trump took the fifth 44 times. But on Wednesday, we also started hearing, you know, this is when there were calls to release the search warrant, because Donald Trump wouldn't say, you know, he said he wouldn't release them. There were calls for him to release them. There were calls from both sides of the aisle. Release the warrant already. And Trump refused. Obviously, we knew he was hiding something, right? Then on Thursday, yesterday, Merrick Garland does something that they don't usually do. He says, I'm going to make a statement. And that's when he said, he got before the cameras with a prepared 3.5-minute statement and said, I have asked the courts to unseal the warrant, because there was so much disinformation being broadcast by the right-wing hate talk media about the FBI casting aspersions, and the FBI, the Justice Department, does not speak out to debunk what's being said. So in this case, I guess Merrick Garland wanted the documents released and let the documents do the talking. And that's when, and then last night, the word nuclear started being uttered. Nuclear. We knew that we were told that the reason, the urgency of this search warrant, that they had to do this so quickly, was because there were documents of such top secret classification that our national security was at risk. Now, we know that this guy, this orange blimp, never had any concern for our national security. The only thing he cares about is his own ass. And it's a mighty big one at that. David, yes, you wanted to say something?
Yes. First, I need to correct you on something.
Okay, what did I get wrong?
The FBI was, in fact, armed. There's pictures of people standing outside Mar-a-Lago with AR-15-type weapons and things like that.
All right.
Now that we have this stuff, we have to find out what the notes from the translator of his meeting in Helsinki with Putin, what those notes say. And then we need to dig up Ivana Trump, because I guarantee you there's shit buried with her, and the mole is malaria. Malaria figured out a loophole in their prenup, and she turned him in so that she could get out of the prenup.
Oh, I agree with you on everything except the malaria thing. I think it's Jared. I think this is part of his, payoff, the $2 billion payoff he got from the Saudis to get him out of, you know, real estate hell. I think he cut a deal with the actual devil. Anyway, that's that. So now, as of last night, he said, I'm not releasing the documents. And it looked like he was going to have his lawyers fight. They had a 3 o'clock deadline today set by the judge to either, you know, put up or shut up, basically. And then this morning I woke and there were all kinds of statements put out by the former guy through his Truth Social. And he's like, yeah, release everything. Release it all now. Well, the thing is, if he really wanted it released, he could have released it. He's got these documents. Well, now we do, too. But what we don't have is the all the notes that explains the evidence that they had to get this warrant. What we have is the actual warrant and then the property list of what was removed from Mar-a-Lago. I tweeted it out. I'll post it on the blog with today's show. Oh, and Tamara says, David, it wasn't the FBI with the long guns. It was the Secret Service outside with the guns. Okay, Secret Service is armed. All right, regardless. So here's what it's a 7-page document that was released. There's a cover page. Then this is the notice of filing of redacted documents. It says the search warrant, not including the affidavit. That's what we really need to see is the affidavit. Signed and approved by the court on August 5th. That's the day the warrant was released, including attachments A and B, and the property receipt listing items seized pursuant to the search. So then the next page, page 2, is the search and seizure warrant, saying that they're commanded to execute this warrant on or before August 19th in the daytime between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m., and it's all signed. It's the usual thing. Then here's attachment A, property to be searched. The premises to be searched, 1100 South Ocean Boulevard, Palm Beach, Florida, 33480, is further described as a resort, club, and residence located near the intersection of Southern Boulevard and South Ocean Boulevard. It's described as a mansion with approximately 58 bedrooms, 33 bathrooms, on a 17-acre estate. The locations to be searched include the, quote, 45 office. How pathetic is he? He calls his office in Mar-a-Lago the 45 office. All storage rooms and all other rooms or areas within the premises used or available to be used by FPOTUS, I guess that's how they designate former president and his staff, and in which boxes or documents could be stored, including all structures or buildings on the estate. It does not include areas currently, i.e. at the time of the search, being occupied, rented, or used by third parties, such as Mar-a-Lago members, and not otherwise used or available to be used by FPOTUS and his staff, such as private guest suites. Okay, attachment, I just read that one. Attachment A is here twice for whatever reason. Attachment B, property to be seized. All physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime or other items illegally possessed in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 793, 2071, or 1519, including the following. A, any physical documents with classification markings, along with any containers, boxes, including other contents, in which such documents are located, as well as any other containers, boxes that are collectively stored or found together with the aforementioned documents and containers, boxes. B, information including communications in any form regarding the retrieval, storage, or transmission of national defense information or classified material. C, any government and or presidential records created between January 20th, 2017 and January 20th, 2021, 4 years. And D, or D, any evidence of the knowing alteration, destruction, or concealment of any government and or presidential records or of any documents with classification markings. And then what we have is the receipt for property. And so it's a bunch of description of items on page one. It's actually page five of seven, but four documents. 29, box labeled A14. 30, box labeled A26. 31, box labeled A43. 32, box labeled A13. 33, box labeled A33. Then we get to page six, description of items. One, executive grant of clemency for Roger Stone. 1A, info regarding the President of France. 2, leather-bound box of documents. 2A, various classified TS/SCI documents. Remember that designation. I'm going to get back to it in a second. Let me go through the rest of the list. 3, potential presidential record. 5 and 6 are binder of photos. 7 is a handwritten note. 8, 9, and 10 are boxes labeled A1, A12, A15. 10A, miscellaneous secret documents. Then there's a box labeled A16. Then there's miscellaneous top secret documents. Then a couple more boxes, A17, A18. Then there's miscellaneous top secret documents. Another box, another miscellaneous confidential documents. There's a bunch of boxes labeled, but in those boxes are miscellaneous secret documents, confidential document, miscellaneous secret documents, miscellaneous confidential documents, miscellaneous top secret documents, and then 28A, miscellaneous top secret documents with a little notation in there. And I saw Marcy Wheeler actually flag that one and said, this is what's going to get him, prosecuted. Well, let me share with you real quickly that TSSCI, because I'm okay, what does that mean? So I do a Google search, brings up list of U.S. security clearance terms, and it says, now I just lost that, TSSCI, where did you go? Now I can't find, okay, SCI eligibility. TS is top secret. SCI is sensitive compartmented information. That's a type of classified information controlled through formal systems established by the Director of National Intelligence. To access SCI, one must first have a favorable SSBI, okay, and be granted SCI eligibility, because the SSBI is also used to grant collateral top secret eligibility. The two are often granted together and written TS/SCI. Access to individual SCI control systems, compartments, and subcompartments may then be granted by the owner of that information. Note that additional investigation or adjudication may be required. In general, military personnel and civilian employees, government and contractor, do not publish the individual compartments for which they're cleared. While this information is not classified, specific compartment listings may reveal sensitive information when correlated with an individual's resume. Either way, therefore, it is sufficient to declare that a candidate possesses a TSSCI clearance with a polygraph. Well, guess what? There was no polygraph here. And Donald Trump did not have the right to take those materials from the White House. So we knew before yesterday that there were confidential documents that he took. There were some top secret things. But it wasn't until yesterday that the word nuclear appeared. And I'll never forget. I mean, I was doing something around the house, and David read me the news alert that came over his phone, and he said nuclear documents, and I went, holy shit. Now, just think, I obsessed for 5-6 years now on whether or not this man's going to be held accountable and whether or not the Justice Department was doing its job. And yet they were. And they were investigating him for stealing top secret information, maybe the nuclear codes. Who knows? And they were on it. So I have faith in our justice system. All right, somebody has been holding on the line from the 239 area code. Hi, who's this?
I'm Robert. I'm in Naples.
Hey, Robert, Naples. You did. Robert.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And listen, I listen to all the shows, and the question today was, does this the big truck size of my anything? I'm sorry. Okay, he's done. What happened, all the shows have been asking the same question, whether or not this helps or hurts Donald Trump.
Oh.
And I'll be honest, I drive trucks all day, and I'm in the traffic, and I live in Naples, and it is very heavy right-wing territory.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, I have yet to see a Brandon sticker anywhere today, and I've only seen one Trump sticker, and possibly because the guy forgot to take it off. You know, or maybe because it's a load-bearing thing that holds his bumper up. I don't know. You know, but I'm serious. Nicole, go home. I mean, I don't know where you live, but, just look on the highway. And look at the cars that you think would have a Trump or a Brandon sticker.
Right.
They're gone.
Good.
You know? So,
well, they should be.
They're either ashamed to admit, the cheerlead for the guy, and now that he's a potential spy, or this is the straw that broke the camel's back.
I certainly hope so. And I hope that he's prosecuted with everything they have. Look, there are still some members of Congress who are carrying water for him, at least Stefanik, for example. But if you notice, the people, I don't call them newscasters, the spokesmodels on the Fox fake news channel, some of them are holding him accountable, too. But some of them are doing the same old shit. You know, for instance, I don't even want to waste time. They showed a photoshopped picture of the magistrate down here in Palm Beach County who signed off on the original warrant on a plane, allegedly, Ghislaine Maxwell. And it was photoshopped, and they're acting as if it's a real thing. You know?
I saw that. They took out the Epstein's head and put that guy's head in there.
Yeah.
As if that guy's going to fly anywhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
You know what? The talking heads on the Fox, they're probably getting, I'm thinking they could be accessories to the fact, you know, if they know that it's a lie and they are they're trying to provoke a response. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, that pure little lady watching YouTube videos to see how you make prison toilet wine, because think it's going to happen. Listen, I'm going to listen to your show. I have a voice, and I think you're pretty.
And
I like your, and I like the show. I'm home, but for some reason, I've been working a lot of hours lately, and I finally found you.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. Well, welcome.
Yeah.
And
all right, thanks.
And I appreciate you calling in. Thank you. And be careful over there in Naples. You know, you're just right across Alligator Alley from me, but it's a world away. I'm in very blue Broward, so.
Oh, you're lucky. I like it here. You like it there.
No, I don't like it here. I'm leaving Florida.
Yeah, I love Florida. I really do. It's just that, like on my street, it's 50-50.
Ooh.
If you're from New York City or New York State somewhere, like I am, you're blue. And if you're not, you're red.
Right.
And it's kind of weird,
but it is
what it is. And so you don't really talk politics. You don't know what people really are. But they do wear it on their cars.
Yep.
They, He's got the Trump flags. And
yeah,
all
I know it. I know it. Hey, Robert, I'm going to move on because other people want to get in. Thanks for calling. You take care. Bye-bye. All right. 540 area code. Hi, who's this?
Yeah, this is Adam, man. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah?
You know, the rhetoric that these people are putting out is getting scary.
It is
scary.
Did
you hear about the guy that went into the FBI office down in
Cincinnati? Yeah. Well, he's now dead.
And they shot him dead.
Well, they shot him dead, after like an hours-long standoff. He went into that FBI office. By the way, a Trumper who was mouthing off on social media and saying, I'm going to fire the first shot to start the Civil War. And then, you know, he fired a nail gun at the FBI office, but then he took an AR-15 in the standoff with police, and they finally killed him because he wasn't surrendering.
I mean, you know, I don't want to get crazy here because it's already done got crazy as it is. But if these people are capable of doing that and Fox News is not being held liable for inflaming those tensions, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
Because if they doing this with the judge, could they be, you know, would they go to that judge's house and threaten that judge and his family? These people that he's got all riled up, they're gone, man. They're gone.
Right. And they are.
They're gone.
They're not only threatening the judge. This judge in Florida, the one that they put up the phony video of. Look, I'm gonna show you this because I can. This is one of the Kilmeade guy from Fox and Fiends in the morning, I guess, was filling in for Tucker Carlson. And so so he's in there for Tucker Carlson. Hold on 1 second. I got to get rid of. Yes, why is there something on my screen that I can't get rid of? Oh, there it is. Okay, so here's what he does. Let me play this for you because it's astounding. So he's filling in for Tucker Carlson last night.
Picture of Bruce Reinhardt. This is the judge.
It is
in
not.
Charge of the warrant.
And spit we'll it out, Brian.
Next. He likes Oreos and whiskey.
But it wasn't the judge. It was a photoshopped picture, and this they put on the air on the Fox Not News channel. How they're able to get away with this, I do not know.
I mean, because like I said, they I don't think they really give a shit. Personally, it's for ratings and it's for whatever money they can get out of advertising, because most advertisers don't want to deal with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's this stuff is really scary, and they need to really. Somebody needs to start cracking down on this stuff that's happening on YouTube and other social media sites. Yes, the Twitters and the Facebooks, they can try all day to address it. They can try to block the channels or get them demolished, but they'll just come back and create another channel under a different name.
Right. I hear you.
And so, you know,
but now this guy, well, this guy's dead. So, I've been listening to this guy, Ben Cooper, I think is his name, on NBC. And he deals with the domestic terrorists and these people. And he's monitoring, you know, all those channels that they talk on. And it's some scary shit. He said it's I haven't heard it this bad since January 5th, since the day before the insurrection. And he said, and they're ratcheting it up to that level. But hopefully, Robert, our last caller, is noticing something. Some people are finally, you know, between the January 6th hearings and now this, I hope some people are opening their eyes and going, wait a minute, maybe we've been had by this crook. You know, just hope that they're seeing the light.
They're probably hiding it right now because they're embarrassed, but they're coming out.
They're coming out.
I see the Let's Go Brandon stuff every day.
Well, but you know, the other part of this week that is so good, you know, has to do nothing with Trump and his finally being held accountable, we hope. But, you know, what the Democrats did right now, they're going to pass the Inflation Reduction Act, whether it reduces inflation or not. Inflation is coming down. And we just lost him. Thank you, Adam, for the call. So, They're going to pass that today in the House. It'll go right to Joe Biden's desk, and he will sign that baby into law. But he also signed this week the CHIPS bill, which allegedly will start manufacturing computer chips here in the U.S. and will help with some of our supply chain issues and get us less dependent on China and their technology. He also signed the PACT Act, which, you know, thank you, Republicans, for showing your true colors, because when they got wind of the fact that the Democrats actually got some strategery over them, they took their toys and wanted to go home. And so who did they penalize? The veterans. And then they lie about it and say, well, you tried to put all this extra money in there that had nothing to do with the veterans.
Bullshit.
Thank you. You can say that again.
Bullshit.
That's bullshit, because they didn't change one word in the bill. If they had, it would have had to go back to the House again. That's all you need to know. The Senate then came back and finally passed it. You know why? Because it didn't have to go back to the House for them to vote on it again, because there were no changes made. Period. We got to call them out on the lies. They're going to keep lying and keep lying and keep lying. You know, here in Florida, I don't have it pulled, but I may just, yes, we did go over the TSSCI docs, Matt Aronson in the chat room. He said, I just got here. Did you already talk about it? We did. By the way, phone lines are still open. I'm going to stay on and take your calls for as long as you want to talk. I know somebody's been calling in from the 754 area code, and whoever it is keeps calling like right after I pick up another line. And, you know, I don't have a screener. I don't have a producer here, so I only take them as they come in. So 754, if you want to call back, you can. We will do a Flashback Friday musical treat once we're done with this discussion, because we're kicking off the weekend and I want to start this weekend with music. So that's coming, but we're going to take care of this business first. So anyway, the Democrats turned around a really bad, dire situation where it seemed like they were getting nothing done to accomplish three big milestones this week alone. By the way, stock market closed the week up. Now, I've got nothing invested in the stock market. I don't give a shit personally, but I do care about you guys if you maybe have money in an IRA or something. Fourth straight week with up numbers, but the media doesn't seem to tell you that stuff because they only want to report on the bad shit. Well, I'm here to tell you this was a good week. And things are going to get better. So they can keep lying and bitching and moaning and stretching the truth and saying things that aren't true. But we're going to keep calling them out. And we're going to keep speaking truth to power. You know, I guess this was while he was talking about the, they're in the House, they're debating the Inflation Reduction Act. But I wanted to share with you, what is it? It's 20 seconds of Kevin McCarthy. This guy is a sad little man. He so badly wants to be Speaker of the House. So two things. One is we need to make sure that the Republicans do not take back control of the House of Representatives. That means everybody needs to vote, please. Because this guy needs to be sent packing. Not only not become Speaker, but sent home to, where is he from, like San Bernardino or something in California? This is what he said on the floor of the House today, and just listen to how he lies.
Answer me this question. Is America better off today than they were 2 years ago?
Hell yeah.
Is the price of gasoline lower?
That has nothing to do with anything.
It is?
It has nothing to do.
The
price of gasoline, you moron, has nothing to do with the action or inaction of the president. So this is a false flag.
Gasoline is lower today than it was 2 years.
It doesn't matter.
Inflation zero too.
And it was last month.
I'm not sure about your math.
I'm not so sure about your brain because you don't have one. Bakersfield. Yes, it's Bakersfield, not San Bernardino. Bakersfield's worse. Sorry, people in Bakersfield. Sorry. It's the truth. It's kind of a hellhole. But it figures that Kevin McCarthy is the representative there. But my God, this is the man who, after the insurrection, said Donald Trump is to blame. Laid it out. plain English. And not only that night, he was saying it a week later until he flew down to Moron Lago to suck the mushroom dick. And that's why we're in the position we're in now. If he and Miss Lindsay had just simply kept up the same feeling they had on the night of January 6th, this would all be done. Done and over with. Although, I guess Trump still would have tried to take classified information out of the White House. It's astounding. You know, when we talk about unprecedented, and of course the Republicans keep screaming, this has never been done before. No president has ever stolen top secret information before. That's what the problem is. You know, when you want to talk about an unprecedented action, the actions of Donald Trump are what's unprecedented. By the way, Salman Rushdie is alive. Thank God. He was speaking at an event in New York City today, and an attacker rushed the stage and stabbed him at least once in the neck and at least once in the abdomen. The governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, says he's still alive. He was taken to the hospital. This world has gone mad. This country is the maddest of all. David McKee, I love you, but no. So I always glance over to see what the chat room is saying. And David said, I love Nicole. She needs to run for office. Can you imagine what she would be, what she would little macro? You know what? I'd be happy to have the job, but someone would need to appoint me. I do not want to run for office, and I'd be horrible at it because I don't bullshit. You can't bullshit a bullshitter, and I say what I feel, and sometimes I rub people the wrong way. So, yeah, I wouldn't do that. Chris says, the best part is Trump has no idea what he took. He never read any of it. Well, that's what's hysterical. Peter Strzok, let me see if I can find this tweet really quickly, because I retweeted Peter Strzok last night because he had what I thought was the best tweet of the day. Now, let me see if I can find it, because, of course, it's not right here. So Peter Strzok wrote, damn, you have to ask yourself, for a man everyone said couldn't be bothered to read the presidential daily briefing, what possible use did he have for such sensitive documents? Sure wasn't to study for a second career as a boosted fission nuclear weapons designer. You think? And then on a listserv that I'm on, my friend Dave Johnson had an interesting observation. And again, let me see if I can find it. Okay. So what he wrote was, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg come to mind, but who among us hasn't stolen secrets on how we make and protect nuclear weapons and how we gather intelligence? You know, I think people need to read up on the Rosenbergs. Now, I tweeted something about them this morning. This couple was put to death. Whether it was deserved or not, whether they were guilty or not, I'm not, you know, what I tweeted this morning was Jennifer King, whoever she is, tweeted out, canceled 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Conservative Republicans House Freedom Caucus will no longer be holding a news conference to discuss the FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Florida estate. So I retweeted that with the tweet. I wonder why. And then in parentheses, I wrote, not really. We know there's no defense for actual treason. Ask the Rosenbergs. And then somebody from Canada responded to me and he wrote, Ethel Rosenberg was murdered by the state and tortured when they botched electrocuting her. And I wrote, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying history doesn't look kindly on people who fuck around with nuclear secrets. Once we heard the word nuclear, that should have been it. These Republican things should have backed off then. You know who didn't? Elise Stefanik. She's just the dregs of the earth, isn't she? She's just horrible. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it was Jared. David thinks it was malaria. We may not ever know who the informant was, but make no mistake, there certainly was an informant because the FBI knew exactly where to go and exactly what they would find, and they found them there. So, you know what? Congratulations to all of us for making it through this week, and congratulations to the FBI and the Department of Justice for keeping their heads down, doing the work, and understanding that this piece of shit former guy stole state secrets from the government. That means you and me, because we are the government. The people are the government in a democracy. And as far as I can tell, we still have that. He hasn't succeeded in killing it yet. And we need not to let him. So, I think we deserve that. I think there are intelligent. By the way, I did reach out to my friend Jack Rice. You know, Jack Rice, who's been on this program many times, my former Air America colleague, also, you know, these days is working as a criminal defense attorney. Jack has worn a million hats over the years. And before I ever met him, he was a CIA operative. He worked in foreign countries as a CIA agent. So I texted him today and I said, hey, Jack, I hope you're well. Any chance you'd be available this afternoon to talk about Trump's stolen intelligence? And he wrote me back. He said, I'm so sorry. I'm ramping up for a trial on Monday and I'm preparing. Thank you for the offer, though. Hope you're well. And I said, no worries. I always think of you with these things. Crazy times, huh? And he said, absolutely bonkers. I can say with certainty that no judge would have signed off on this without absolute proof. It isn't usually that high, but here, with a former president and with the scrutiny that was certain to follow it, they must have been extraordinarily specific. They knew exactly what they were looking for. It's possible if it ever gets released, it will be heavily redacted. And that's the affidavit part. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. Yeah. And now I look over at the chat room and it looks like some of you guys are talking about Ivana. You know what? They do need to exhume her body. And not because, and I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist here. And I'll just say this is me and this is pure conjecture. But the circumstances surrounding her death were so curious, were so just not right. So this was allegedly a healthy 73-year-old woman who there were no other pathologies, apparently, nothing like to make her dizzy or anything. She fell down a flight of stairs and had a lot of ruptures, but they didn't perform an autopsy. I'm sorry. That just doesn't sound right. And then she's buried on Donald Trump's, one of his golf course properties that gives him a tax break and turns the golf course into designated as a cemetery that gives him all kinds of other, benefits. It's ridiculous. Would you stop treating this guy like he's anything other than a faulty excuse for a human being? I just don't get it. Why did she not take the elevator? Because she was pushed. She was pushed. Oh, my God. She was pushed. Okay. Again, there's my conspiracy theory for you. All right. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to hit the weekend. So my weekend's going to be, you know, packing and purging. I need to throw stuff away because when you move, I'm a pack rat. I've got stuff. But so while I'm packing things up, I'm going through old CDs and things. And, the other day I floated here. I said, I've got all these CDs I'm looking to get rid of. If anybody wants any, I've got collections of artists. And somebody in the chat room said, dare I ask? I wish I could remember who it was because I don't know if he's here today. And I said, ask. And he said, Kevin Gilbert. Kevin Gilbert was a good friend of mine. Kevin Gilbert, when I met him in 1990, was in a band called Toy Matinee. If you were in Los Angeles in 1990, you knew of Toy Matinee. Some years later, it's like about three or four years later, Kevin Gilbert was participating with a group of his musician friends in this jam session, a weekly jam session that they had where they'd get together and make music. And then he brought his girlfriend along who happened to play keyboards and sing backup in his band. It was a woman named Sheryl Crow. And Sheryl Crow had a record deal with A&M Records. But the record that she delivered to them, they didn't like. They turned it down. They said, this isn't good. Go back, try again. So Kevin brings his girlfriend, backup singer, into his Tuesday music club, and they start jamming, and they decide they'll write and record her record. So what came out of that was Tuesday Night Music Club, Sheryl Crow's first album that made her a superstar. Kevin Gilbert played on every song, wrote most of them. He and Sheryl then broke up. It was a contentious, ugly parting. But that's who Kevin Gilbert is. There's much more to Kevin Gilbert than that. And I figured what I'd do today. Oh, and I see Sandy in the chat room says, I love Sheryl Crow. Well, oh, Chris Anderson. Oh, Chris, I'm so glad you're here. Because Chris, who said, that was me, Nicole, I'm here, I'm late. Well, you're just on time. Because we're done talking news and politics for now. I've had my fill this week. It was a good week, and now I'm ready to enter the weekend. So we're going into flashback mode. We today will go back to May, I think it was May 30th of 1995. I'm going to put up on the screen a picture, but it's not from then. The picture is from, you know, years earlier, because there's no video on this. It's just audio only. Anyway, am I going to have Kathy Griffin as a guest on my show? Oh, and then there's another call. We'll get to Kevin Gilbert in a moment, but I told you I'll take your calls as long as you keep calling. Hold on 1 second, caller. Am I going to have Kathy Griffin on as a guest? I had her on Air America back in the day, and I don't have contact for her, but I'll try. I'd love to have Kathy Griffin back on the show. We'll see. All right. Anyway, hi. Who's this on the phone?
This is Marcus from Las Vegas, 702.
702. Hey, Marcus, yeah, from Las Vegas.
How you doing?
Good.
I just want to hope that you have mentioned, you know, emphasized the fact, something that's being, I think, glossed over in the media and all this coverage, is that, you know, this guy's, Trump's intent, his guilt. You know, we can surmise his guilt from the fact that he hid, you know, he intentionally withheld, you know, he the fact that he took the boxes out of the White House was a crime.
Yep.
You know, he gave back 15, but he withheld.
Withheld them. And then he lied. And the thing is, they were negotiating with him, for months to try to get the rest of the stuff. And then they finally said, enough already. That's it. Either, exactly. You know, put up or shut up. And then they decided that the severity, the importance of these documents that he had, it was national security at risk here, that they couldn't wait any longer and had to go in with a warrant.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you think about this. You go over to someone's house, somebody invites you over to the house, and you take some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And they make you give the stuff back. Well, you give back everything except for this one thing. That's what this guy did.
Right.
I'm going to give it back everything but these things. And what was it? They said, what, 20 extra boxes?
Yes.
Or 20 12, extra 13, 20,
20 yeah. extra boxes, 11 sets of classified material. 11 sets of classified material in 20 boxes. And he lied to them and said, I don't have, I gave you everything. And then he, you know, in one of his statements this morning on his Truth Social, talk about, Orwellian speak. He said all they had to do was ask.
Bullshit.
They've asked. They asked and asked and asked and negotiated and negotiated, and he wouldn't give. So he is so full of shit. I'm so sick of his lies.
You're absolutely right. You know, and let me close with this here, Nicole. You know, this dude is driven by a dollar. I mean, if he could rip off the paper boy, he would. If he could rip off the kid bond, he would.
Yep.
And so, there's only one thing. I know that he only had one thing in mind in withholding this classified information, particularly the nuclear.
Right.
That's what we know about.
Right.
He had one thing in mind with that. What he always has in mind. What can I get for it?
Exactly.
How can I make a buck?
How can I make
a $1 million off of it?
Right. And did he turn this over to any of his friends? Did Jared share it with MBS? Did Trump try to get money for it, to suck up to Kim Jong-un? We don't know what he did. And he is such a warped mind. I don't put any of that past him. I would not put any of that past him. I think he would do all of it. If the price
was
right.
And the right wing knows it too. And that's probably the biggest tragedy in all this is that the right wing knows this.
Right.
And yet they're still trying to make everybody else be the bad guy for it.
That's right. You know, that's
one guy lost his life yesterday behind it. Look at what they did, how they slandered and the length that they're going to protect this piece of shit, this garbage.
Yep.
Who would do that? I mean, that's treason. That's treason.
Yeah.
It is treason.
This is treason. And yes, it is treason. And I'm sorry, when you steal nuclear secrets, whether they're codes or whatever, the word nuclear, you steal top secret documents that deal with the nuclear program, that's treason. Sorry. You need to be locked up. Period.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. It's good to hear from you. All right. So I need to we're like 4 minutes away from the end of the hour. So I need to let our friends who are listening on Progressive Voices know that I am going to go to this Flashback Friday music interview next. If you want to keep listening, come on over to NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Or NicoleSandlerStream.com. We'll just bring up my audio stream. Or come join us on YouTube. On that Listen Live page, you can click and get into the YouTube chat room because we've got a great group of people hanging out there. So I'm going to start this interview. So we will lose Progressive Voices in about 3 minutes. But you do want to listen to this because Kevin Gilbert, again, he was a musical genius. And you do know his work if you're a fan of Sheryl Crow's first album. You would be a fan of Kevin Gilbert's if you knew his music. And I'm going to tell you after the end of the interview why you probably don't. So there's that. All right. So let's get into the Wayback Machine. We're going back to May 30th, 1995. I worked at a radio station in Los Angeles called KSCA. It was FM 101.9. It was LA's finest rock. And Kevin Gilbert was my guest. And if you're looking at the picture, that's Kevin Gilbert on my left. As you're looking at the picture, is on the right. The other guy with him is Mark Bonilla, who played with him in Toy Matinee, but not in the band that he was on the record that he was on to promote that had just come out. Okay, you ready? Here we go.
Any listeners as half of the former Toy Matinee.
Let me go back to the beginning.
We've moved into the music hall, Nicole Sandler at KSCA FM 101.9, and I'm looking at an old friend known to many listeners as half of the former Toy Matinee. Kevin Gilbert is here.
Half of the former Toy Matinee.
Well, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
You've just released your first solo album, Thud, and that's also the name of your band.
Mm-hmm.
Why Thud?
Thud was the sound that when I was working on the record, the gear I was working on in my studio was this really old clunky like equipment from the 70s, and almost everything I did on it went thud, thud, thud. So I had that word written on the board because after a while I stopped fighting it and went, okay, my record's going to sound really thuddy. So that's what it is.
So do you think the record sounds thuddy?
Yeah, it's got a big old fat low end kind of chunky thuddish quality to it.
Okay, although the first track on the album really doesn't have that sound. That's more light and breezy.
Light and airy.
Why don't you do that one for us now so listeners might recognize it, because we have played that one a bit here on FM 101.9. It's Kevin Gilbert in the music hall.
Three. Thank you.
I don't think that I'm deluding myself. I don't think that this is just a phase. And I don't mean to shock you. I hope that I'm not rushing in. But I think that this is kind of important. I don't know exactly where to begin. My whole life has been a constant ailment. You can provide a simple remedy. Yeah, I'm gonna show some vast improvements when you give your love to me. And you can trust that I'm a worthy recipient. And be assured I'll act responsibly. I'll treat it like a work of rare and priceless art when you give your love to me. So how's about it, girlfriend? Am I gonna have to twist your arm? Perhaps it's not the most original concept, but it has a kind of timeless charm. You'll have the little birds flying all around your head, and you'll gaze at me dreamily. Yeah, the whole world's gonna smile and wave when you give your love to me. And I will write you 100 sonnets. Every word will rhyme easily. And all your friends will be genuinely supportive when you give your love to me. I'm sick of hearing about sadness. I'm sick of violent crime. I'm sick of angry militant lesbian feminists. I'm sick of imperfect rhyme. I've always heard that we should love one another. And what a fine example we will be. Maybe we can start a trend or something when you give your love to me. And maybe then we'll get our friends together. And they'll all get along famously. I think that everyone will feel much better when you give your love to me. There'll be global peace and religious tolerance. All men as brothers in a world that's free. There'll be a perfect cosmic harmonic convergence when you give your love to me.
Kevin Gilbert at FM
101.9. Thud.
You know, I heard Merrily play that song the other day, and she said, cynical? Yes.
It's a beautiful, naive song about love and how great the world would be and if everyone loved each other. That's not cynical.
Okay, see, that's how I look at that song.
Yeah.
The rest of your album, however, I think is cynical.
No.
But that song, I had a, thought had a very
no. The rest of my record is depressed.
Is that what it is?
It was a hard time. I was dealing with the mid to late 20s emotional craziness that happens to me. It doesn't happen to everybody, maybe, but it happened to me. So we documented it on the Fine Thudding record.
It took a long time for this album to come out because the Toy Matinee record was released...
91,
Was it 91?
Actually, I guess it came out late 90 and 90. Then we toured till 91. And I took about a year off to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. Toy Matinee was a large-scale production, mm-hmm. kind of on all counts. Everybody in the band was like the finest musicians we could find. And the whole thing was just big. And expensive.
Right.
And I wanted to sort of like find a way to do something that would be a little more stripped down and honest and small and something I could control. Because Toy Matinee just spun out of control really fast. So
we'll go back to that in a second. What are you doing tonight?
What am I doing tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a proposition.
A friend of mine's playing at the E-Bar in Pasadena.
Oh, I'm asking because it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Oh, you're asking about the Tuesday Music Club.
It was a clever way to get into it.
We're starting those in June. We just we took the month off because everybody wanted to take a vacation before we started. But we start the Tuesday Music Club record. What is it, June 8th or 10th or whatever the first Tuesday there is.
Okay, so let's back up a second.
All right.
The Tuesday Music Club was a thing that you got together with a bunch of your buddies, David Bayerwald. Who else?
Bill Bottrell, who had produced the Toy Matinee record. That's where I met him.
Mm-hmm.
Used to have his studio next to mine in Pasadena, and we work on each other's songs. Actually, When You Give Your Love to Me, I wrote with Bill. And he was working on David Bayerwald's Triage record, and I was poking my nose in there, and we all just decided to get together on Tuesday nights and drink and talk about religion and politics and maybe if the wind was blowing the right direction, we'd like write a song or something. And this went on for a couple months, and then people sort of started joining in. Dan Schwartz, the bass player that David knew, came down and started adding some low end to our songs. And then Brian McLeod, who had been the drummer from Toy Matinee, right, came and started adding funky, groovy things to the tunes. And we just sort of became a regular Tuesday festival of music making.
And during this, was this after Toy Matinee, after you finished touring, or was it?
Yeah, actually, this started about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, mm-hmm, now. It started about 93. We started getting together sort of summer of 93.
Because when you were on the road with Toy Matinee, that's the first time I ever heard of Sheryl Crow, because she was touring with you as
she
your
played,
singer,
yeah,
and your keyboard.
Background keyboard, right. Background vocals and keyboards on the Toy Matinee tour, which... Well, she doesn't talk about much now.
No,
I was like,
no.
Hey.
But so she, at your invitation, came and joined the Tuesday Music Club.
Right. We were sitting around and on one Tuesday evening and talking about how evolved we were as men. And then we kind of looked around the room and went, well, we have five white guys in a room talking about how evolved we are as men. So why don't we get a woman's perspective on religion and politics? So we called up Sheryl. And, I was going out with her at the time. I said, why don't you come down and lend lend an idea. So she came down, and actually the first night we got together, we did Leaving Las Vegas.
You
so
just wrote it and recorded it that night?
That night. Everybody just sat around and kind of did it.
And that's the version we hear on her record.
Yeah, almost exactly, I mean, near as I can tell, the same mix that we did that night, too. Wow. It seemed like almost exactly the same.
So you went on and recorded this whole album, which became Sheryl Crow's award-winning record.
Yeah, the 5 million selling Tuesday Night Music Club record.
But now you're a co-writer on most of the songs on the album. Did you make a lot of money from it?
I'm still waiting to see those checks coming up. I don't know yet. It's weird. When you get paid for writing a song, it's way like 2 years behind.
Huh.
So, you know, I keep telling my landlord, you know, next month, I'll have the money next month. Come on, I was nominated for a Grammy. I'll have the money next month.
Well, you were nominated for a Grammy. Did you get a certificate or anything?
Yeah, I got a piece of paper. It goes on my wall. Says I was nominated for a Grammy.
That's cool. For song of the year, for All I Want to Do.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's...
So people come to my house, I go, have you seen my my nomination?
Grammy nomination.
Can I show you my fine? Oh, yeah. Actually, me and my girlfriend went, and I think we were probably the best dressed people at the Grammys. We went in full Edwardian funeral attire. So it was
that
beautiful.
Keeps in keeping with the dark mood of
Thud. Yes.
Why don't you give us another taste of Thud, what Kevin Gilbert is up to these days.
Let me change this guitar here. I'll give you some of that cynicism you've been talking about.
Okay, is this the one I asked for?
Yes.
This is Goodness Gracious?
Yes.
From the album Thud. It's Kevin Gilbert live in the FM 101.9 Music Hall.
We're going to make sure we're in tune just for a second.
Tune it up.
Are you there?
Let me see here.
How are you? Yeah, we're good. Tuning's overrated, huh?
That
all right.
Quick.
This is Goodness Gracious.
Is there nothing left to say? When the ones get to keep looking are the ones that look away. It's pabulum for the sleepers in the cult of brighter days. The cult of brighter days. Goodness gracious, at the mercy of the crooks. We're broken, stroking vegetables, and there's way too many cooks in every pot of pink slip, in every mouth a hook, in every mouth a hook. Goodness gracious, I'm not listening anymore. The spooks are in the White House and they've justified a war. So wake me when they notify, we're gonna fight some more. We're gonna fight some more. Goodness gracious, not many people care. Concern is getting scarcer to compassion really rare. I can see it on our faces, I can feel it in the air. Goodness gracious me.
everything's lost. They burned down all our bridges before we had a chance to cross. Is it the winter of our discontent or just an early frost? Just an early frost. Goodness gracious, of apathy I sing. The baby boomers had it all and wasted everything. Now recess is almost over and they won't get off the swing. Won't get off the swing. Goodness gracious, we came in at the end. No sex that isn't dangerous, no money left to spend. We're the cleanup crew for parties, we were too young to attend. Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious, we came in at the end. No sex that isn't dangerous, no money left to spend. We're the cleanup crew for parties, we were too young to attend. Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious, my grandma used to say, the world's a scary place now, things were different in her day. What horrors will be commonplace when my hair starts to gray?
Kevin Gilbert, the Music Hall at FM 101.9.
Oh, Chuck peeked his head around the corner. Chuck liked that one.
Chuck liked that one.
Hey, Chuck.
It has sort of a toy matinee feel to it.
There you go.
Yeah, it was nice.
Actually, yeah, a few people let me know. They think, oh, yeah, that's the kind of toy matinee song. So.
A lot of words.
Yeah, boy, we just keep spitting them out. Huh?
You write songs with a lot of words. You jam a lot
I have so much to say.
A lot of lyrics in there. Yeah. And yeah, that is pretty cynical. Do you see hope?
Well, actually, I was looking at things about, you know, people come to me and say, well, that song's like really kind of like against the baby boom generation or something. And what I was trying to talk about more was that every generation that comes up looks at the generation before it and complains and says, you know, boy, we really have it lousy. And I was hoping to sort of illustrate through the song that, you know, everybody does that. Everybody kind of has it lousy and everybody has it great. Everybody has it about the same.
The line about where the cleanup crew for parties we were too young to attend jumped at me and says, whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were looking at the bright side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody else.
It's pretty cynical, yeah. I mean, there's hope on the record. It isn't in that song.
Would you like to introduce your
family
members?
Yeah, the other guy speaking is Russ Parrish. He's playing bass and singing. And then on hand drums and vocals is Nick DiVirgilio. And they are two of the other three members of the band.
And who's the third? Who's
David Kersner, who couldn't be here this morning.
And he plays keyboards.
He plays keyboards.
And Russ usually plays guitar, and you play bass.
Yes. When we play live, I play bass. Russ plays guitar. And we're multi-instrumentalists.
Well,
and we're playing actually Thursday at the Troubadour.
Yes, you are.
Can I mention that?
Absolutely.
Can I plug my show?
Of course.
Thursday, June 1st, at the Troubadour at 10:30.
Okay. Now, a lot of people still ask, whatever happened to Toy Matinee? And I was wondering if you ever heard the third Matinee record.
Yes, I did. Actually, Pat sent me a copy as soon as it was done.
Well, just in terms of history.
Patrick Leonard.
Leonard was the other half of Toy Matinee.
Yeah, we were, Toy Matinee was really a band when we started out. It was five people sort of working out songs together in a room, kind of like Tuesday Music Club, actually. But what happened as soon as we got done with the record, contracts got thrown around and people had to sign their life away, and three of the five members decided they didn't want to sign their life away, so they left, and then it was just me and Patrick, and then the record came out, and Patrick is like a really well-known producer and a really busy producer, and he had to go to England to work on Roger Waters' record. And he was in England for like a year or something working on this. The whole time the record was like getting played on the radio, so I started to do promotion for the record without him, because you know our record company was telling us, you know, you either promote this thing or we're going to drop you and never speak of Toy Matinee again.
Late 1990.
Yes, this is like 1990-1991. So I went out and toured, and we got about 14 cities into the tour, and things were going actually pretty well. And Patrick decided, I guess, that he wasn't happy about the band doing well if he wasn't in it anymore. So some more contracts flew, and then there was no Toy Matinee anymore. So,
but
it was ugly for a while, and there a lot of lawyers made a lot of money on it. But in the end, I mean, we're still speaking.
So what did
we're
you,
still speaking. We're
what
still
did you think of the third Matinee record?
I liked it. I always loved Richard Page's voice. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a great singer. I liked the first Mr. Mister record. So,
mm-hmm. And did you send Patrick a copy of Thud?
No, actually, I don't have his new address. He just moved to Colorado, and right. I was trying to figure out how exactly to do that. But we're getting played up there a lot, so he's probably heard it on the radio by now, I
Terrific.
Hope. So.
All right, Kevin Gilbert is with us in the music hall. Can you share one more song?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me change guitars again. Hold that. Hey, Nicole, hold my guitar, would you please?
You got it.
Wait, here.
Bang anything with it.
It's chaos
it's
in here.
Third guitar.
Well, I have these funny tunings, you know.
Yeah.
My secret tunings.
It's a Joni Mitchell thing.
Yeah, exactly. Does she have a lot of guitars?
She has a lot of tunings.
Yeah. this song's called The Tears of Audrey. A good friend of mine died, actually, while I was making the record. And, I was good friends with his mom as well, and this song I wrote about her.
Audrey's donning her black dress again, a dress she always plans to wear. It's over, she says, it's softly over. I'm all alone. She does not listen to the eulogies. She gives no credence to her pain. From now on, I'm through with love. From now on, I will not love again. There are no hearts to mend. There's no reasons why, there's no need to cry for the sadness of it all. There are no skies of blue, there are no dreams come true, and there is no care. Let the world beware, should the tears of Audrey fall. She carefully polishes her heart of stone. She deftly sculpts her feet of clay. I'm no one, and none can touch me, no one. It's easier this way. There are no hearts to mend. There are no prayers to send. Is it so unfair? Let the world beware. Should the tears of Audrey fall? Shutting all her windows tight, and now she's closing all her blinds. How can I believe in light when darkness? It's all a why there's no need to cry for the sadness of it all. There are no skies of blue. There are no dreams come true. Is it so unfair that the world beware? Should the tears of Audrey fall?
That's pretty.
Thank you.
Kevin Gilbert and Thud. Couple of more quick questions.
Sure.
Is it true that the Tuesday Music Club did a record with Linda Perry?
Yeah, we just finished it up. Bill's actually mixing it, I think, as we speak. Linda Perry from Four Non Blondes.
Four Non Blondes.
Really neat record. I actually think she's calling it Linda Perry with the Tuesday Night Music Club.
Cool. Again, so we'll be able to hear that soon?
I don't know. I think they were planning on a late September release. I mean, that's what I heard.
Okay, and then in June...
I don't know if I'm spilling the beans or not.
In June... No, well, we had heard rumors okay. to the effect, so you just confirmed it. And in June, just the guys, the Tuesday Music Club, the original?
Yeah, the five of us are going to get together and start recording and see what comes out. We're all pretty... excited about doing music again. So,
all right. And Kevin Gilbert's got Thud. The record is available in your local record stores.
Yes.
And you're playing Thursday night at the Troubadour.
Yes, Thursday night at 10:30, the Troubadour.
All right. Kevin, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us in.
And with that, we are done. Now, I told you I would tell you at the end what happened. And unfortunately, Kevin, you know, he went through a pretty dark time, as you heard on that record. And... it was, I don't know, sometime maybe the following year, I want to say, that I was out one evening. I came home late on a Saturday night, I believe. And there were, it was back in the days before voicemail, I had an answering machine. And there were a bunch of messages on my answering machine. One of them was Mark Bonilla, the other guy in that picture that was just up on the screen. And one was from Doug Buttleman, who was Kevin's manager. And they were calling to tell me that he had died. What we learn later is it was apparently autoerotic asphyxiation. He didn't mean to kill himself as far as we knew. They often say the most talented people are the most troubled. And Kevin had a real dark side. And you heard it on that record, Thud. It was so good. And I don't know if it's still available. The reason I could get away with playing it here was it was his own record label that released it. So I don't think there's any major label that's going to come out and copyright violate me for it. He played every instrument. He produced that album. He can sing. He was discovered by Patrick Leonard, who was his original partner in Toy Matinee. Patrick Leonard is a major record producer who produced everyone from Madonna to, I don't know, you name it. And Kevin played piano, and he was at this Yamaha piano competition. That's when Patrick Leonard heard him and said, "We need to work together." And that Toy Matinee grew out of that. He died too young. He was too talented. He was too good. So he put out the album Thud, and he put out one other that I believe was released after he died. And it's called The Shaming of the True. And actually, I have a limited edition, like, booklet. Oops, and there's a note from his then manager. Here, it was sent to me by Elliot Kendall. This was sent to me in January of 2000. And the note says, "Hi, Nicole, I'm doing promotion for the estate of Kevin Gilbert. Very limited mailing to radio so far. Hope you groove, all the best." So it's this one I know is still available in some places. He's so good. And yes, so Karina said, "Oh my God, mention of Sarah Gilbert's ex, Linda Perry." Linda Perry was in Four Non Blondes, you know, the song What's Up. You'd know it if you heard it. You may not know it by its title. But anyway, so she recorded an album with the Tuesday Night Music Club as well. I don't think I ever heard it. But anyway, yes, that's called The Shaming of the True. So there are two Kevin Gilbert albums, Thud and The Shaming of the True. there's the Toy Matinee album, and there's also, he was in a band called Giraffe. So if you want to find, and he played on a bunch of other records, but that's his music. So I will also, I posted in the chat room, what about Cintra Wilson? I didn't know Cintra Wilson. I met her at a memorial for Kevin that was at Bill Bottrell's house. Bill Bottrell was the producer that they talked about, was in help, who produced Tuesday Night Music Club. He produced Toy Matinee. So after Kevin died, there was a memorial. It was at his house. Cintra was there. I didn't know her. But I'll never forget. We were all sitting around the pool just talking, and Cheryl walked in, and the whole place got quiet. And I think she wanted to pay her respects, but, so what I started to say was there was an article written in the San Francisco Gate by a journalist named Joel Selvin that tells the story. I will post it on the blog. I put it in the chat room, but I'll post it on the blog where I post today's show. You should read it because it really, it's the only place that I've seen that really tells the story and gives Kevin his due. And in fact, some years later, after the article was published, the next time I was in San Francisco, I reached out to Joel Selvin and we actually met for breakfast. And so I thanked him for the article and we reminisced about Kevin. So anyway, if interested or don't. Anyway, was she a positive force for him? I don't know. Sydney, I really don't know. Somebody was in the room with him when he died. When they found him, and the details are in the article. I'm not going to repeat them here. But there was obviously another person there, and I can only guess that it was her. But I don't know for sure. It just, he should still be alive. He should still be making music. But as someone in the chat room said, when artists leave a body of work behind, they never truly die. And Kevin sure sounded alive there. So anyway, listen to the music, enjoy it, and let music, help you through the tough times. I do. All right, with that, we're done. Have a wonderful weekend. I didn't want to bring you down with it. I wanted to play something good. And Kevin, for whatever reason, has been on my mind lately. So I thought I'd pull that out and share it with you today. And maybe we'll do another one next week. Not Kevin, but, somebody else. We'll see. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And keep the music playing. Bye.